welcome to The Other Room. My name is Oreoluwa Leshi, or Ore as my friends and family call me. The Other Room is a podcast that features conversations with exceptional African women who are defining and redefining their roles in life. These are women who are charting their work and life journeys with purpose. We will look at their career trajectory, the challenges they might have had along the way, and the things they have learned on the path to where they are now. My work focuses on equipping girls and young women with the skills and confidence to prepare for fulfilling careers in science, technology, engineering, and maths. I do this through a non-profit organization called the Women's Technology Empowerment Center, WTEC, which I founded and is based in Lagos, Nigeria. I hope that my guest stories will help reaffirm that you are where you are meant to be, and if not, will encourage you to make important decisions about your next steps. Our guest today is Akofa Bensiengchil. Akofa is a social entrepreneur who is passionate about effecting transformational change in the lives of underprivileged Ghanaian girls. She believes that the education and mentoring of the girl child can truly transform a community, and she has spent the last 12 years doing just that. Akofa holds a first-class honors degree in biochemistry from the University of Kent at Canterbury in the United Kingdom, and a master's in management from the London School of Economics. Welcome, Akofa. Hi, Akofa.
Hi, Ore.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Same here.
Okay, so let's just get right into it. So can you tell us about little Akofa? Where did you grow up? What kind of girl were you? Do you have any interesting hobbies?
Okay, little Akofa was a very innocent girl. So I grew up in Accra, Ghana. And it was obviously in a more innocent time than the time that we're growing up. So growing up, I was like the adventurous girl. So I had an older brother. So I would always follow him around. He was like my big brother, my role model. And we used to go fishing for tadpoles in gutters. We used to play in uncompleted buildings. The sort of thing that you would never let your own child do now. And he was like a born leader entrepreneur. So we used to organize like fun fairs for the whole neighborhood. We used to have fashion shows. So it was a wonderful, wonderful time growing up. In terms of interests and hobbies, I was an avid reader. I loved reading. My mom had a no television policy, so we weren't allowed to watch television. So growing up, you know, reading was my escape. I hated cooking and housework of any type. So I used to disappear on top of the bunk bed in my room so that nobody would find me when it was time to like maybe prepare dinner or stuff like that. So, but it was a wonderful time growing up.
Oh, that's fantastic. You sound just like me. Yeah, I wasn't so crazy about housework either. And then cooking wasn't my thing. But reading, I could read all day long. So that's interesting. So did you have an idea of the kind of life you wanted for yourself when you were young? Did you think about, oh, what it would be like to be a grown-up? And what kind of grown-up would I be? What would I do?
I think growing up, I always wanted to be a doctor. Actually, that was the only dream that I had. And I think it was a bit also with the programming, because, you know, in the times we were growing up, people would always say doctor, lawyer, accountant. So for me, I love the sciences. So I always wanted to be a doctor.
Okay. And so then by the time you got into secondary school, you were on track to become a doctor.
Yes, I was. So I studied science. I did physics, chemistry, biology at A-level. So I was on the doctor track, you know, no looking back.
Okay. So then you got to university, you studied biochemistry, and then so what happened? Because I know you're not a doctor now. So what happened along the way?
Interesting, you know, some of it chance, some of it I think God was sort of just guiding me, because looking back now, probably I wasn't meant to be a doctor. So I actually picked my subjects. I studied biochemistry, and I was actually on track actually to do my PhD. I ended up actually studying biochemistry in the UK because our Ghanaian universities went on strike for 2 years. So that's how I found myself, you know, in the UK, because I had an offer from my university. But after my first degree, in my final year, I had applied to do a PhD. But I had two, what I call two defining moments when I began to think that this is not maybe the track for me. So I did a year in industry as part of my biochemistry degree, where I worked in a lab and for 1 year, which was part of my degree. And also in my final year, I did a project. So I think we're cloning some stuff. It was all very cutting edge and very exciting. But I quickly realized, both with my final year project and also the year I spent in industry, that I was more of a people person. And actually, by spending so much time in the lab, because it was a very isolating experience. So, for example, you would run an experiment for 3 days in a cold room, you would see nobody else for all those 3 days. So I quickly began to realize that at least the PhD track was not for me. So that's when I began to think to say that, okay, what am I, who am I, what are my likes, what do I like doing, etc. And then I began to sort of look outside the sciences. My father, I must say, was very, very disappointed, that because I actually had two offers, you know, including an alumni scholarship from my university to go on to do my PhD.
Wow. Okay, so then you started looking at other things that you might do, looking at your interests. So how did that lead you to your first job? What was your first job?
So in terms of my first job, I worked with Barclays Bank, and I was a high net worth recruitment manager. So I used to recruit all the high net worth customers. I must admit that sort of leading into Barclays, it was partly also sometimes, you know, when you're younger, you've done your master's, you know, you were looking for the most money necessarily. So I had become perhaps a bit corrupted. So and that was also part of the reason. And I think I had very clear goals that I wanted to buy my own house. So like getting into banking was one of the easiest thing. And as I said, I love people, so I was in retail banking. So every day you were interacting with so many people. And because I was recruiting high network customers, you know, I interacted with like amazing people like MD, CEOs, etc. So it was, I mean, it was just very, I gained my energy from people, so it was a perfect fit for me.
You're a true extrovert,
Very much so, yes.
I see. So wait, so you did your undergrad degree in biochemistry, and did you do a master's immediately afterwards?
Yes, so when I sort of ditched the PhD plan, I went to do a master's at the London School of Economics in management, because it was just to give me like a bridge into the business world. You got what I'm saying? Because I'd come from a solely science background, and it was also probably just a year to at least appease my parents that at least I'm doing a master's degree, even though I'm not going on to do the PhD.
So why specifically management? By then, did you have an idea that you wanted to make a lot of money, or did that come after your master's degree?
In terms of the master's degree, it was more out of interest, the subjects that they were studying, like in the management degree. So, for example, we studied things like game theory, economics, stuff that I never had access to as a science student. So it was all very fascinating. So I think I chose it, one, the school, because obviously LSE is a prestigious school, but more also the course content and also what I felt it would launch me, because I wanted a more general thing. so that I could. So I applied for consulting jobs, I applied for banking jobs, but I ended up sort of leaning more towards the banking industry.
I see. Okay. So then you started working in the bank, and obviously you loved it because you were in a role that was really well suited to your personality. You could interact with a lot of people, meet a lot of people, and I guess you were energized and learning from them. So then, how long did you work in Barclays Bank?
10 years and start to finish. So it was an incredible ride with them. Yes.
And then, so at the end of, well, towards the end of your time there, why did you decide to leave?
So in terms of Barclays, we always had, interestingly enough, we always had a dream to move back to Africa. So I started off my career in Barclays Ghana. Found myself in the UK for about 9 out of the 10 years that I worked for Barclays. So we had this dream always to come back. And so my husband had moved, and I was also looking to move. And whilst I was with Barclays as well, to get involved in, it had a lot of other programs that were available to you, nothing to do with work. So, for example, I was a very keen member of the National Mentoring Consortium. So I used to mentor ethnic minority undergraduates. I used to do work with them. So that is what ignited my passion for mentoring. And at the same time, my siblings and I, in 2000 and, my siblings and I in 2007, I believe, had founded our NGO, or sort of come up with the concept of our NGO. So increasingly, I was getting the pull to do something that would be more impactful. So Barclays was fantastic because in my last years, they actually agreed a part-time working arrangement with me. I was based in our Accra office. I used to work 4 days a week for Barclays, and I used to work 1 day a week for the NGO. So it was like a really nice transition into going full-time for the NGO, into the NGO work.
Oh, I see. Okay. So then you started the NGO called the Akwa Kwenyehia Foundation. Did I say that right?
It's very hard. It's Akwa Kwenyehia Foundation, but let's call it AKF for short, which is fine.
Okay. Thank you.
But well done for
Okay.
trying.
Thanks. So you started that, and so it was in 2007 or 2008 that you moved full time into AKF.
No, I actually moved full time into AKF around 2012, but we came up with the concept in 2007. We went live in 2008. But when we started the NGO, it used to run like from a desk in my brother's office, and we used to use coppers like national service personnel to sort of run it, So we started our first scholarships. But when I moved to Ghana in 2011 and I started working there day like 1 day a week, we quickly realized that we needed to do more. So it was at that point when I finished my role in Barclays in September 2011, I now became exec director in January 2012, and that's when AKF actually really began to take it off. So between my siblings, so I have a brother and a sister, and we are all co-founders of the foundation. So at any one point, one of us has been involved. So my brother started it, my sister ran it for a couple of years, and then I took over in January 2012.
Okay, I see, I see, I see. So it sounds like you have been running it the longest.
Yes, I think I'm the one that is bent that way in terms of that, because this is really, it was accidental, but in forming the NGO, in running it, I feel I have found my goal and my passion,
Oh, that's fantastic. So, what is the mission of AKF?
So AKF is all about our slogan is that we want to change Ghana one girl at a time, and it's about taking underprivileged girls from all over Ghana. So we are in quite a number of regions in Ghana. I think it's only about four regions that we are not in, we don't have girls representation from, and providing them with educational scholarships, not just educational scholarships in terms of paying the school fees, but giving them a monthly stipend, pocket money, help with extra classes, books. And then alongside it, which is where my passion and where I have really made a difference is we have mentoring programs that are run alongside our educational scheme. So because we are looking at the holistic girl, so we provide mentoring, and it's not just mentoring in terms of career. I mean, that's a big part of what we do. But for example, we're extremely passionate about community and making an impact in our communities. We're extremely passionate about like core values. So we teach soft skills like etiquette, personal hygiene, but also things like teamwork, assertiveness. So just like you get a full experience when you get on one of our, when you are awarded a scholarship with our foundation. But it was really taking underprivileged girls who otherwise would never have a chance. So we are an NGO of what I call last resort. So chances are if you apply for a scholarship and we don't take you, probably find the resources to sort of further your education. It's a very critical space that we...
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think especially for girls, because I mean, in general, I mean, we have, you know, we have deep poverty levels, you know, across the African continent, but girls in particularly are vulnerable. And if they don't have access to education in particular, support, guidance, mentoring, I mean, really, girls' options for the rest of her life can be really, really limited. So, I mean, so the work that you're doing is incredibly critical. Now, it sounds very involved. I'm trying to imagine like how many girls you work with in a year, because you're providing scholarships, stipends, pocket money, buying books, also matching them with mentors as well. So about roughly how many girls do you work with in a year?
So at any point, like our database, because we have an interesting model, so we take just a few girls at a time. So in any year, so maybe the most number of girls we took in a year was about 15. But we take like between 2 to 5, sometimes up to 10 girls a year, and then we take them through our programs. But what is different about AKF is also that we are a family. So for example, the girls that started the program in 2008 are now working for me as like volunteers within the organization. Mm. So literally we've had to even come up with programs that when they graduate, they become ambassadors because they don't want to go anywhere because of sort of that closeness and the tightness. Because with us too, there's a lot of FaceTime with the girls, you know, through our CAMS, through some of the other programs that we run. So we build a relationship with them, you know, and my dream is that they will run, you know, I'll pass on my torch to them for them to run with the organization in future. So that makes a difference. So in terms of our pool, we have about 70 girls at the moment. But some of these girls, as I said, have been with us since 2008. We started with 2 girls and today we are at about 70. But we're currently doing assessments, and in the next academic year, we'll be taking on. So every year we take on, depends on funding, we take on a couple of girls, or if we really have a lot of money, we take up to 10 girls. Yes.
No, that's fantastic. So how do you get funding?
Funding is very, very interesting. So as a family, this is something that we believe in so passionately. So, you know, we put our money in. So as a family, we have like minimum contributions, which believe you me, I actually sit on my siblings and my parents to actually put in. We've also had grants in the past, which obviously any NGO will know that those are very welcome fund. So we've been funded in the past by people like the African Women's Development Fund. But I think that what is also very interesting about AKF is that we get a lot of individual donations from friends, family, people who've heard about us and are beginning to see some of our impacts, you know. So we get a lot of funding from individuals. There are people that sort of commit to giving us money every year. We are on a couple of, you know, maybe mobile money platforms. So sometimes people would go on that platform for something else, see us, and then maybe make a donation. So that's like those three main areas. So individuals, family, and then NGOs.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then how do you measure your impacts? I mean, obviously, you have some of your alumni who are working with you, and I think that's clear impact. But do you have other ways that you can measure the impact that you're making in the lives of the
I think
girls?
that even with the girls that we are sort of dealing with, interesting is that 95% of our girls are the first in their family to graduate high school, let alone university. So when we come and we come alongside you, so when you look within even their family, most of the time they are the first to finish secondary school, they're the first to finish university. And I think we have about 25 girls who have now graduated university. We've had first class degrees, just name it, I think we've only had 1 to 2 degree. Yes, so all the
That's
majority of our
impressive.
girls are graduated with a 2-1 or a first class or a distinction. And we have like over 30 diverse degree disciplines. So we have like I have a girl who graduated engineering first class last year. And she's actually now even updating my website, because she learned web design also doing that. So those are some of the things, And then when we also look at, even in their own spheres. So a lot of my girls, for example, we encourage them into leadership. So we've had like SRC secretary. So one of my girls, Mina, she was the national secretary of the national student body, whatever it's called. Like it's called National Union of Ghana Students, so NUGS. I have another girl who is treasurer in her hall. So the girls have been in leadership positions, wherever they find themselves. Now we actually have girls who have actually left the shores of Ghana and are studying abroad. So we have girls in North America, in Kenya. And we have them also again running for leadership positions. So those are some of the things that, it's very clear that we can point to. One of our girls, for example, got onto the Harvard Emerging Scholars Program. So she was in Dubai 2 years ago. So these are opportunities that, or even you and me, we would love to sometimes have benefited from. So those are some of the things that we are doing. So I think it's now very clear in terms of the model that we must be doing something right.
Yeah, you definitely are, because when we met up last year for lunch and you were telling me about the program, you were telling me about the scholarships and what the girls are doing, I was really impressed because a lot of times with nonprofits, NGOs, a lot of the work starts and ends with training and capacity building. But beyond the initial capacity building, there's still so much that needs to happen. And what I like about AKF is that it's really holistic, like you said. You're providing scholarships, so education, capacity building, but you're also providing access to other kinds of learning and information, like the life skills, the mentoring, which is really, really important. And I wanted to touch on that because I can imagine that. So you said that a lot of the girls in your programs are like the first to in their families and or maybe their communities or social networks to go to university. And so once you get to university, there's another challenge that is there because you can be a very hardworking student in secondary school, and then you get to university where no one is really paying attention to you. There you have to be really self-disciplined, motivated, focused, and it's really easy to lose your way. Do you have any kind of challenges with students who get into university and then they're not able to handle everything that is going
I
on?
think that by and large, we've been incredibly lucky. And I must admit that we have an incredibly tough selection process. So, the lady that heads up, she's a board member that heads up our selection, like she's the head of our scholar search, is a retired headmistress. And believe you me, if you sit through an interview with her, so I think by virtue of the girls coming on board, by the time they get to university, also we've worked with them because we take them at the secondary school stage. So remember that we would have had at least 3 years with them by the time they get into university. So in those 3 years, they would have come for like a formal induction. And we also involve parents. So the parents come along with it with to the induction. So about the student, but it's also telling the parents that this is what it is. We have a quite a rigorous contract that we sign. You have to maintain a certain grade point. And then they come for our summer camps. And believe you me, if you've been through my summer camp, just even once, you will pick up really good habits because it's like boot camp. You know, sometimes they cry. Wow. Not cry, but it's,
in a good way.
You know, it's tough. You know, even sometimes, like last year, for example, I even struggled to keep up with the pace. But one of my favorite girls who, like, runs the, helps me to run the summer camp now. Even when I was like, oh, let's take a break, she'd be like, no, Auntie Akofa, we must go on. Yeah, so we do that.
That's
yeah.
good.
And then we check, like, you have to send in your results. Sometimes we've had, so for example, one of our girls is doing computer science at the African Leadership University in Rwanda. So her grades weren't so good. But when we probed, for example, she was an art student. So she didn't have, like, advanced mathematics. So that foundation wasn't there. So we are getting her help. So much as I say that we are quite strict as well, we are coming alongside you on your educational journey. So if there's a problem, we will actually try and probe. We don't throw you off the program, whatever, but we try and understand, you know, what is the root cause? What can we do? And together we come up with a solution. Mm. So we have some of those things. What has been interesting more in terms of, not necessarily girls not doing well academically, but more the influences of social media, you know, and sometimes girls getting carried away, you know, by posting things. But that's something that we deal with really in our camps. And even in these COVID times, one of the things that we do is we have Zoom calls with the girls from all over. So we talk about some of these things, you know, and hopefully try and nip things in the bud also. And because we also have a pool of older girls, they serve as like mentors. So sometimes actually things don't get to me to be resolved, you know, between them, you know, because it's like in their DNA, they have AKF, you know, some of the older girls, you know, so a lot of the older girls, we run what we call is a virtual office. So this is made up of myself, my assistants, like my paid workers, and my ambassadors, those who are finished. And occasionally, if we have an exceptional candidate, somebody who is still in university. And so we have different roles that each person plays. So we have, for example, one girl who her role is simply to look out for scholarship opportunities, vet application. So for example, for all our 18 girls who are won scholarships abroad, or I never saw one application. It was done start to finish by my virtual team, led by one of my NGO girls.
Wow.
So they do different things. There's somebody in charge of summer camp, you know, we even have like pastoral care and counseling. So even when we have a problem, so more recently this summer we had to sort of deal with some issues, but the girls themselves will come up and say, Auntie Akofa, give these girls another chance, we will step in and make sure. So we came up with a schedule, so every week one girl, one of the older girls, is checking in with certain people that maybe need extra support, need extra help. So it makes it, because obviously I can't do everything I would. And in terms of the level of detail that we go through, because it's almost like having a big sister. That's what AKF is, you know.
Wow. That's really awesome. I like that, you know, you're really grooming leaders and they're displaying their leadership skill already. I mean, you can see it. And they're part of the AKF organization or family, essentially. After we had our chat last year, one thing I really took that away, actually, because in WTech, you know, the organization I run, we have a lot of girls who come through. Like, we work with a lot of girls each year. But one thing that we always really wanted to do more was in terms of follow-up and mentoring. And from listening to you speak and talk about, you know, the way AKF is structured, I realized that we needed to actually get our alumni more engaged. So we've actually set up a girls advisory council. So we're going to have some of our alumni serving in. So it's like a board but made up of some of our alumni. So so that was actually something that I took away from
extremely
you
critical.
So
and then for me, some of it was born out of accident. So I remember there was a year my assistant, she's the AKF coordinator, she was doing her master's degree and working full time. So we needed, and that was the year that things began to really take off in 2017. So we had some people who had maybe just graduated. So I pulled them into the office for 3 months, you know, to help along. And, you know, they are very, they are quick learners, you know, and very open to feedback. So I actually thought, why not? You know, let's expand their roles. And then what I've come to also realize is that some of them have different interests. So sometimes once I'm able to narrow where you are passionate about, put you in charge of it. You got what I'm saying? And I do give them the freedom, you know, to run with it. But I'm always there as a safety net, as a backup, you know. So we have calls, you know, they update me, etc. So it's worked out very well. But if we hadn't had the challenge of sort of things taking off where my assistant had less time available, we probably wouldn't have gone in that direction. And for a long time as well, a lot of AKF, the knowledge resided in my head. And that was something that I was extremely uncomfortable with because succession was a problem. But at least by having a really good assistant that I can lean on, by having a lot more of the girls, you know, sharing the vision. And for example, one of the new initiatives we are working on, which we hope to pilot post-COVID, it's an initiative that was, it came up from a challenge that we set the girls. The design, we are in the inception and design stage, is being done by the girls. We will soon move to proposal stage. And hopefully, we're hoping before COVID to launch in August in our summer camp. But obviously, we'll need to see. But that whole initiative will be run and delivered by the girls. Nothing to do with me. Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. Wow. I'm really looking forward to that. So in terms of your structure, so obviously, so there's you, there's your assistant, you have some of the AKF ladies who are there. Now, you had mentioned your board. How active is your board? How involved is your board?
Involved. So I would say that certain people, so for example, our head of scholar search, you know, she is critical because she selects the girls. Sometimes, because I'm based in Nigeria, she would do like the inductions on my behalf. Our treasurer, our board, we had a wonderful, wonderful board chairman, Joanna Foster, who passed away. So since she passed away, it's a bit been a bit difficult, but we're in the process of actually reconstituting our board, you know, so that, but we have individual members who I lean on because, for example, I'm in Nigeria, I can't sign checks. So the treasurer and another board member signed the checks, etc. So they are very available. And for example, the board members actually also sometimes come out to our camps to come and help us and train the girls, you know. So, yeah, they are very, it's something that is close to their heart, you know. So they are always, you know, and then they also contribute in terms of financially. They are extremely supportive. I couldn't. At least the ones that are very active, I couldn't ask for more, you know. They look out for me because it can be very lonely as so, exec director because you don't have access to, like, formal trainings like what I did in when I was in Barclays. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, okay, every 6 months you go off on a course, etc. So actually, a lot of the decision-making and lots of the thought processes, I run it past them.
That's true. I remember when I started WTech, I started, you know, on a whim and a passion, and I was focused on the mission, which was to equip girls with technology skills. I really didn't give any thoughts to the organization that this, you know, the programs and the activities would function within. The organization that will be delivering the mission. But once I got in, I realized that, whoa, this is actually tougher. I'm not just dealing with, you know, running the programs, but then there's also, you know, looking for funding, you know, recruitment, managing people, which, you know, I had not even bargained for. And it can be incredibly lonely, especially when you have to make necessary but unpopular decisions. decisions. Yes. But thankfully, I mean, there are, you know, I think there are more courses and professional development opportunities on social enterprise and the nonprofits, which, you know,
helpful. And then I also have, one of the things I didn't mention was I have an incredible network of, we call them friends of AKF. So these are people that some of them, like, are my personal friends. Some of them sort of have heard about us and they volunteer, but they sort of lend their expertise. So, for example, I have somebody, when it's an HR issue, she will look at it, you know. And she's actually Nigerian, Fisayo. She's been amazing. Like, she will review every proposal. She's a lawyer by training. So you can imagine she picks out every single thing. So I have those people who actually volunteer their time, which is extremely helpful. And then even, like, some sort of recent graduates, etc., who help us, like, when we're doing mock interviews. So we have, like, in addition to our own girls, what we call our friends of AKF, who are sort of extremely passionate and about what we do, extremely committed. So we also draw in from them.
That's really fantastic. Now, I wanted to ask, so AKF obviously is in Ghana, and you are running a lot of programs
in Lagos. And
where are you right now? Okay, so how are you managing? Because, you know, you are still the head of the organization. Yes, you have your board members. You know, you have your assistants, you have some of the girls, but how are you managing? Because I'm sure normally you'd have, you know, hopped on the plane, you know, flown to Ghana, maybe overseen a few things, come back to Lagos. So how are you managing to run such a vibrant organization, you know,
technology from afar? And though I'm not the most tech person, one thing we do leverage is technology, because when I had my son 6 years ago, it became very clear that I needed to spend more time in Lagos. So we began a transition, sort of. So for us, when COVID came, we didn't need to, we just took our laptops home, literally, those who were in the office, because everything is run like on the cloud, etc. And then we have conference calls, you know, even at the moment we're training on Zoom, you know, so it has been good. In normal times, like pre-COVID, what is good about AKF is that we are an educational NGO. So we have access, because most of the girls are sort of in secondary school, then university. So we have access to them. And remember, our girls are also all over Ghana. So it's not like they're in Accra that we have easy access to them. So we have access to them in the vacations. So typically I would spend summers in Ghana, I would spend Christmas in Ghana, and then half terms as well I would spend in Ghana, because those are the times where sort of we do things. And then our programs are designed around, so the residential in-house one we always do in the summer months, where we have all the girls available, because especially in the summer, for example, we choose a window where most of our girls maybe are back from university abroad and also back from university in Ghana. So it's been good in that sense, because at that time I have a bit more time, my son is also on vacation, so we can go back to Ghana. So it's been like technology. But even in COVID times, what has been interesting is just how we are able to even leverage technology. So we are extremely excited. So for example, for most of our girls that are abroad, like in the US, in parts of Africa, we used to maybe rely on maybe WhatsApp to keep in touch with them. But now we are having sessions where we have our girls dialing in from all the time zones, and, you know, just sometimes, even if it's just a chat, how are you doing? You know, how are you keeping? But it's been very good. So we're excited about some of the things that we're going to be doing. So for our girls who win the MasterCard scholarship, foundation scholarship, for example, they used to go for a residential orientation in Rochester. Obviously, this year, it won't happen. So we're going to have to run orientation online. So it's been quite interesting. But technology is the answer. And, you know, I'm always looking at, you know, how can we leverage it better? It's also good from the girls' perspective, because it forces them, you know, to look at what is new and what is out there, because, you know, they need to be able to compete on a level playing field when they go. So I accept no excuses. Sometimes, you know, some of them may not have like a decent smartphone, so you might need to help them with that, etc. But all of them, you know, whatever they, whether it's free conference call, whether it's Zoom, whatever, you just publish it and they churn up. And we just have regular meetings also in the office, you know, so we have set office days where we dial in and we check in. And we use things like apps like Trello, you know, to keep on top of our tasks, etc. So it's quite a wonderful experience, you know, moving online, you know. But because of my personal circumstance, that was, we had to move to that model. But, you know, critical even in these times, you know.
Yeah, it really paid off. It really paid off. Yes, yes, yes. It would have been really challenging. I mean, I think for a lot of nonprofits, not being able to run their programs, because a lot of programs are run face to face. So that is challenge number one. But I mean, if you know you can't even communicate with your staff, you know, your stakeholders, I think that's even more of a challenge. So, and I can imagine you're probably, you know, at the point where you even have your girls who are introducing you to different technologies, like, oh, we should try this one, let's try TikTok, let's try.
But it's good because we still have a few challenges. So one of our girls, for example, she's in the Eastern region of Ghana. She doesn't have, we've been trying different like network solution providers. So she may need to bring her into the office a bit more in terms of her orientation. But by and large, you know, we try and we don't give up. That's the thing with AKF. You know, we'll keep trying. If this one doesn't work, we'll try something else till we get something. And on a Zoom call, maybe not everybody will be able to participate, but we are working on it. So at the moment, for example, so one of our programs that we run is like a college prep course for our girls that go outside of Ghana, and we have different people teach it. So some in-house by us, some like externals. So we've been doing the in-house one in this COVID times on Zoom, just to make sure that the girls are up to speed, etc. Because this year in particular as well, the three girls that we have going are sort of, they joined us very late in the day, so they are not sort of as technologically advanced, etc. So we've been trying out the in-house training on Zoom before we now bring in the external facilitators, you know, to help us deliver the content. So we keep doing, like, just keep trying, like, just with a dog, like a dog with a bone, you just keep going till you find a solution.
Just keep going. Oh, something else jumped out at me. So you said your office is in Accra, right?
Yes.
But you have girls from all over Ghana. So how do you find the girls?
Through a variety of ways. So we advertise in newspapers, like your, we use the Daily Graphic, which is like the biggest circulation paper, which goes into most schools. Like maybe the headmaster will have it. Then we also go on local language radio. We have, obviously, application always open on our website. And increasingly, we are getting so many word-of-mouth referrals. You know, so the girls themselves are bringing people from their communities. And as, I guess, AKH has grown, and sometimes we've had some press articles, you know, people keep bringing us, you know. So, and even last year, one of the things that we brainstormed at camp was, how do we get, because whilst I'm happy for the girls to bring girls from their communities, I don't want to be stuck in the same communities. You know, we want to open this as wide, because, for example, the communities that we are not in, I want us to target specifically to see, can we get some girls there? Which is why even the technology is exciting us, because for all our programs, and because of the demographic that we deal in, we have to provide transportation, food, every time a girl comes. Some girls have to travel like as long as 24 hours to get to us for summer camp, or sometimes 12 hours by road. You know, our roads are not good, etc. So actually, if we can get like a smartphone in their hand and we can do Zoom, do you get what I'm saying? It will reduce, because for some of the face-to-face program, apart from the annual camp, because of safety, etc., it's only summer camp that we have the full cohort that come out. You know, other times we prioritize, you know, who comes, but then it's a bit unfair on those who live further, you know. So we we advertise and then people now hear about us, and we always have like a waiting list of people looking to get in.
I can imagine. Because the results speak for themselves, so I can imagine that. So what kind of challenges do you have? Well, obviously, I know funding is probably an ongoing thing that's, most nonprofits struggle with. What
So
are the
funding
challenges you have?
obviously is a big challenge. And then what has been very interesting and also sometimes extremely sad is actually, I would say number two challenge is sometimes the parental mindset, which is actually why we came up with our induction program. So you will think that by giving somebody's daughter a scholarship, by opening them up to opportunities, like maybe you go for a robotics camp and all that, the parents will be happy. But we have some parents actually, even standing in our way and refusing permission. And one of the most recent examples was that we had a scholarship opportunity from the African Leadership Academy in South Africa, which is something that, people would even pay to put their children in. And we had identified the right girl. Her mother refused to sign the consent, and the girl was underage, so we had to let the opportunity go. So that can sometimes be hard, So funding is always an issue. And then sometimes the parents and their mindset, the girls themselves actually, I don't know if it's the selection process or the programs that we do, they are always very keen and very committed, and they will do anything, to make it. So we don't have too many challenges in that regard. And yeah, so that has been it. And then also in terms of funding, some of the challenges, especially because when I took over, because like you, we also started on like a whim and a passion to say that this is something we wanted to do, but we didn't really think. And I remember I no longer interview any girls for a scholarship because I have too much of a soft heart. So there was a year that my mother and I did the interviews, and I think we admitted almost everybody. Do you get what I'm saying? Without thinking that, do we even have money to actually pay for these girls? So we had that was a year that I think we took 15 girls, and we had two times in their 4-year journey where we came close to shutting down the NGO because, the school fees bill and what was in the bank accounts didn't match, but we got through. And when they finished, because AKF originally started as an organization looking at secondary school education. But when those girls finished, we quickly realized that if we stopped our journey at secondary school, we wouldn't have made the change that we wanted to. So we went through a period where we didn't have money to actually fund the tertiary people. So we introduced what is like an internship or a gap year where we help the girls find jobs. We did different things with them, and some of them had scholarships, some of them we helped, some family stepped in, And today, actually, all those girls that were in that defining moment in 2013, they have all finished, with the exception of one who is in her second or third year in university, have all finished university.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's really fantastic. I wanted to ask, how do you balance? So you spoke about how you measure impact, which is really important. Now, some funders love large numbers. So you go to them with a beautiful proposal for, a really impactful project, but let's say you're going to be impacting like 20 girls. It's a very in-depth program, but 20 girls. And they're like, ah, no, we want numbers because for them, it's about CSR. We'll put it in, in the papers, in the media. So how are you able to have conversations with funders? Obviously, you want their funds. They want to benefit the community and have an impact, but a lot of organizations care about, about how big they perceive the impact to be. So
So I think the
how do you have those
funding that we got so
discussions?
far, it was for like starter or when you were starting. Do you get what I'm saying? The funders that we do. But this year is actually a defining moment for us because we are looking at scaling. Do you get what I'm saying? So the first, I don't know, 10 years was about proving the model. Does this even work? So all that we are working on now is how we can scale, you got what I'm saying, and also begin to replicate, not just in one place. So, for example, one of the initiatives that we are working on is about community and going into the communities more. And we will be able to have the numbers. What we've also done is that for some of our programs, like the summer camps and also the what we call AKF community and our speaker series, we actually open it up not just to our own NGO beneficiaries, but to other underprivileged girls. So we are able to, so when you add in those ones, you begin to get the numbers, you know, like the people that have benefited from your hands. But one thing that we know that we need to do, because 2020 and sort of beyond is all about scaling, you know, in terms of our impact. Some of the things that we've been doing is sort of getting our house in order, make sure that we understand sort of the mechanisms. And it's going to be interesting that can we replicate, you know, what we are doing, and you know, maybe like we go into six regions, etc. Yeah, so that is it. Because to really go after the good money, you are totally right. We need to. We've been lucky in terms of, you know, maybe some companies sort of love what we do, so they would give us some like a little seed money here, little seed money. What was interesting, and before COVID, we were having some really interesting conversations with one of the oil companies in Ghana, which was looking at a partnership, a 3-year partnership model with us. Do you get what I'm saying? So because one of the things that we want to go into more is about STEM, because currently we have about only 30% of our girls that are in any form of STEM degree, but we want to come to like 50%. So we're talking about a partnership, you know, but obviously things have gone a bit pear-shaped, so those discussions have stalled. But hopefully we know we need to scale our model and to be able to deliver more, because also we are doing something good, so we want more people to benefit from it. Yes, you know, and it
To
breaks my
benefit
heart
from
when I
it.
have to turn away people, you know. You got what I'm saying? Matters that I don't interview them, I still hear their
Well, it's a
stories, I see their profiles, you know, and it's very difficult to say no.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, we have no space for you this year. Well, it's a good problem to have, and yeah, I'm happy to have those conversations with you, as you are
Yeah,
scaling, so we can
yes.
trade, we can share experiences, and yeah, that'll be fantastic. So I wanted to find out, are there any of the maybe skills you developed during your time in banking that have proven useful
I would
for
say
you in your work
probably
with
all of them.
AKF?
All right, you would not, because for example, managing stakeholders. So for example, like when you do get funding, obviously you need to do reporting. You need to, even getting money, you know, like you need to be schmoozing people all the time. I was a project manager or program manager, so that has been like very critical in terms of managing all the projects, you know, putting structure, things like governance. Do you got what I'm saying? Even like business etiquette, you know, because one of my biggest frustrations in Ghana is like people don't even have, or some people don't have an email culture. So you send an email, nobody will respond. But you know, those sort of things are respond within X amount of time, you know. So I would say most, if not all, the skills, you know. And then when I was in Barclays as well, some of the jobs that I did, my earlier jobs as well, it required thinking out of the box. Do you get what I'm saying? So we apply that same creativity, you know, in terms of what we do, you know. So I would say that before you do this, it's always good to have some corporate experience. It definitely helps.
That's good. I think that's really good. That's really good advice. So in all your working life in the bank and now with AKF, I mean, have you had cases where you felt that you were discriminated because you're a woman? People just thinking that, oh, you are not up to it because she's a girl, she's a woman.
I think that at the start of my career with Barclays, it wasn't more so that I was a woman, but I think that it was more my relative youth that I got discriminated. So my first job was in Ghana, and obviously you are working with like gray-haired people, and you know, this young girl, you know, thinks I'm the big ideas person, etc. So I think I did, whether it's age discrimination. And then when I worked in the UK as well, it wasn't necessarily discrimination as a woman, but I had more challenges because I was an ethnic minority. So for example, when I started my career in Barclays, in the building that I worked, the only other black people were cleaners. Do you get what I'm saying? So sometimes, so I had to even learn how to dress properly so that you not be mistaken for, like, maybe you come to serve, you enter a meeting room, you are not the one bringing the tea and coffee, if you get what I mean. But as a woman, I don't know. I was very lucky growing up that I had a very strong role model in my mother. So I don't know if it's just like a false sense of just confidence, you know. I always knew who I was. And my parents always taught me to believe very much in myself and to not to see anything as impossible. So that's a mindset I always operated in. But personally, I don't remember challenges from the woman's side, but more on ethnic minority and sometimes my age, you know, because people wouldn't want to talk to you. For example, when I was in Barclays, I couldn't just turn up in the branch. You know, you have to book a meeting with the branch manager, etc. And I don't know if Asun would say in Nigeria, go and do ballet, etc. But me, I'll do anything to get the job done. Do you got what I'm saying? So, and eventually I won those people over. So it was.
Yeah.
It was good.
Oh, that's good. So, what do you do for fun? Because this, I know this non-profit work is very involving. You can do it for 24 hours a day.
Oh,
so,
do
you have time for fun, first of all?
This work, it doesn't really feel like you are working. I don't know how to put it. But yes, I know what you mean. You can do it for 24 hours. So, I love traveling, obviously, pre-COVID, you know, like going to new places. I love reading. As I said, I'm a people person. So, anything to do with people, like hosting people, like hanging out with friends. I also have a small business that I run with two other Ghanaians, which is in the creative space, in the fashion space. So one of the things I didn't actually realize how much I missed it, so we went into lockdown, was actually going for fairs and exhibitions, you know. That's one thing that I love doing. And even though sometimes we are there to sell, you know, I find it very invigorating and, you know, very energizing. And it helps get your creative juices as going as well.
I own, you know,
some of your pieces.
And I always get compliments every time I wear them. So I'll be coming back for more. So what's next for you? It looks like, you know, you're reconstituting your board at AKF. The girls, you know, the alumni are getting more involved. You're spending more time in Lagos. You have a creative business. So what's next for you, like over the next 2 years or so?
We want to sort of completed our transition into sort of the next phase where we are doing more programs, you know, and increasing our impact. One thing that is also very important for us is that we want to go on a journey of self to get to a place where we are self-sustaining. So we want to begin that journey. So we have some entrepreneurial initiatives that we've been looking at, you know, piloted by the girls. So maybe putting a lot more resources in terms of that, you know, and so that at least in the beginning, the money that we generate from those initiatives would actually fund our welfare fund, you know, to help our tertiary people, you know, have a more comfortable life. And I mean, long term, you know, we want to build like the Kriakwe Center of Excellence, you know, which is going to be our residential facility. You know, we have the vision board, you know, it's a 6-story building. you know, we have state-of-the-art, you know, things where we can train. Because part of our challenge is that because our girls are all over Ghana and very often would not have accommodation in Accra, and unless for the annual summer camps, which are residential, we struggle sometimes, you know, to give them access to the same opportunity. So by having our own center, you know, which we will train, I mean, it will be residential, it will house our library, etc., you know, it would really, really help. And AKF community is coming to a community near people in Ghana, you know, that is looking at, we're actually going to begin to target at a much younger age, you know, working with the community leaders, you know, beginning to tackle wider problems like teenage pregnancy, drug abuse, you know. So those are some of the things, you know, that we have identified that, you know, through mentoring and, you know, even training peer educators, we can, you know, begin to change the trajectory. Because when I look at some of my older girls, you know, so my girl who runs the scholarship scheme, her best friend from primary school has 3 children and she's 22. So if we can catch them even earlier, hopefully we can stop those stories, you know, from beginning to become problems, you know. So that's the new initiative that we're working on, so that we can be in more communities. So we will have monthly programs that actually run, you know. So bringing the best of what we do through our camps, through our mentoring programs, through like even our skills acquisition, you know, and engaging those girls to make different choices, hopefully, is what we're looking at.
Yeah. Oh, awesome, awesome. But for then you personally, what's up for you coming up in the next 2-3 years?
Lagos is also coming to an end, so I'm looking at new opportunities. I don't know where I'm going next, but I actually think that, you know, I've been sensing for some time now, so I'm just seeking direction, you know. There's some courses, there's some courses that I'm doing, and then looking, like these days I've had some personal experience in special needs, so that has also been my focus, you know, and sort of getting trained up, you know, and being able to do different things. So yeah, I don't know. in terms of where we'll go next, but yeah, I do sense that it's time after 11 years to say goodbye. 11 wonderful years.
Well, 11 wonderful years. We'll definitely miss you, for sure. I know I will. But with technology, you know, you're just what, a call away. So so I look forward to staying in touch and, you know, learning about what AKF is doing, and hopefully one day coming to visit as well, whenever next, you know, I happen to be in Ghana.
Yeah, we'll look forward to.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me on The Other Room in conversation with Akofa Bensi and Chill. Akofa is a fellow social entrepreneur, just like myself, and I enjoyed learning about how she's changing Ghana one girl at a time. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe to us. We are now on Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, and Spotify. And also leave us a review. Until next time, live your life with boldness and joy. Bye.